Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source of insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 11th, 2021. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well, and actually, I'm doing better than well. I'm excited for yet another hopeful episode about climate action in Massachusetts. Today, we'll be looking at in detail at the roadmap that the Baker administration released for net zero by 2050 and some 10-year goals as well. And we'll even look in detail at the four pillars of this roadmap. Riveting. Tune in.
So 2021 has been remarkably busy from a climate perspective. Even though we're only 11 days into the year, let's just kind of reset. We've got a enormous federal climate bill hiding inside the COVID relief package. We talked about that a couple of shows ago. Up on Beacon Hill, the Massachusetts legislature has passed a bill, another climate bill specific to Massachusetts, which is a good deal. And we'll come back to it, but I urge you to call Governor Baker and urge him to put his signature on that bill now. That's a good thing. But then something else has happened over the last few days, which again is a good news story for climate hawks in 2021. And that has to do with the following thing. Massachusetts has had something called the Global Warming Solutions Act now since the year 2008. The Global Warming Solutions Act has been revisited a couple times. And in the revisitation of that, of the Global Warming Solutions Act, it's fallen out that the governor is required to make what amounts to a roadmap with some specific commitments about how the state of Massachusetts is going to improve its climate performance with a goal out in 2050, right? So fine. We've talked for years about different aspects of this Global Warming Solutions Act. But it turns out that in the year 2021, Governor Baker's administration has released what are called roadmap documents, which are essentially strategies about how the state of Massachusetts will reach its climate goals by the year 2050. And I thought that would be, an interesting topic to at least touch on so that people know such a document exists and then go check on it when they want to put themselves to sleep at night and keep it by their bedside in a small tabular form and read it like the anyway. So Mariah, was anything I say crazy there except for the Lives of the Saints you keep by your bedside to read a chapter a night before you go to sleep?
might have been a little crazy that part, but everything else sounds good. It's heartening to see all this climate stuff happening in just like you said, just the first 11 days. I mean, it's been more than 11 days for a lot of it, but
it seems like it's been 11 years.
It does. I know. It's true.
Well, so let me peel back another layer of this onion, because believe me, there's a lot of jargon and a lot of stuff here that isn't really important to the central message. But the Baker administration released two different documents this week. One document was a roadmap. I don't even have the specific name in front of me, but a roadmap for how Massachusetts will achieve its goal of 85% carbon, being carbon neutral by the year 2050. Okay, so already there's a bunch of buzzwords in there. Being carbon neutral by the year 2050, there's a roadmap, which is essentially a set of strategies about how to get to that goal 30 years from now. Then there was a second document, this is quite interesting, which is consistent with the first document, but only looks out 10 years. And it sets a 10-year goal for the year 2030 that says Massachusetts will reduce its carbon dioxide emissions by 45% by the year 2030. Okay, so two slightly different documents, very much related to each other, different. And these things are required to exist by law. It's good. The goals that are set in these things have some legally binding force. That is to say, The government can get sued if they don't achieve the goals, et cetera, et cetera. So let me explain a little bit about what I think the strategies involved in the roadmap for the 2050 target is. Does that make sense, Mariah? Stay with me, because there's so many ways to meander off the path here. I want to say.
Waiting with bated breath.
Okay. So the first document talks about the fact that we need to become net zero by the year 2050. And what net zero means is that if there are any remaining carbon dioxide emissions that are made, if there's a residual lawnmower that the state of Massachusetts owns that's still running in 2050, putting out a little bit of carbon dioxide, there's going to be some mechanism that captures that carbon dioxide in the state of Massachusetts and puts it back in the ground. So between the capture and the emissions, we're going to be net zero by the year 2050, right? Underneath that is a statement that we will have reduced, the state of Massachusetts will have reduced its raw carbon emissions by at least 85%. Okay, so we're going to be net zero. We're going to reduce our emissions by at least 85%. And the implications of that is that 15%, the remaining 15% of the pollution that we do, the carbon pollution that we do emit, will be captured somehow and put back in the ground, right? Net zero. That's good. That's a good goal. Okay. It's also a tremendously challenging goal. I mean, how do you do that? And so that's where the roadmap comes in. And I think one of the things that roadmap is quite clear about is that there's lots of different ways to go. There's lots of different options you want. And the state wants to preserve as many different choices it can make for as long as it can. But this document lays out what it calls the four pillars of decarbonization. Right? These are the four big concepts that you can use to talk about the whole question of how do you get to be net zero by 2050. And the four pillars, I'll just kind of read them off. They say the first pillar is the end use of energy. That is to say, your cars, your buildings, your lighting, all those things have to stop using fossil fuels. So one pillar is to say, goes back to sort of a Dave Roberts kind of idea that says electrify everything. And so one of the strategies is that across the board, you are going to stop burning fossil fuels to do things. And over a 20 or 30 year period, that probably means you're going to stop using things like natural gas to heat your house. Okay. And how do you organize that over the course of 30 years? All right, that's the first pillar, is to change the way we burn fossil fuels. The second pillar of decarbonization is to improve energy efficiency, right? And these are no surprises. This is the kind of thing that not anybody sat down to write a plan, but these are very common sense things to do. You want to improve your energy efficiency by retrofitting homes, right? Fixing up businesses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The third pillar of decarbonization, once you've talked about getting rid of the end use of energy, you're more efficient, then you have to talk about having the production of renewable energy. So now you're talking about wind turbines and solar panels and and batteries to store that, a whole revamping of the way you make electricity and energy. Right? And then the fourth pillar is this concept that you're going to have to sequester that remaining carbon. So now you get this very important component and you say, somehow I'm going to look all the forests in Massachusetts, we have to be able to calculate that it's taking up as much carbon dioxide as we're emitting, or we have to have some other mechanism for getting that carbon dioxide. So the four pillars of decarbonization, those, there'll be a quiz on this at the end, Mariah, so pay attention.
You know, I always take notes.
The four pillars of can I just go completely sideways for 1 second? Wasn't there a book, Seven Pillars of Truth, written by Lawrence of Arabia? Anyway.
I believe you. I'm sure there is.
That's a whole side thing. But I guess the point is, and the message that I think is entailed in this long and kind of arid discussion is that somebody at the state of Massachusetts is thinking about this stuff and trying to find a way to get us to net zero by 2050. And they have certain tools at hand, certain ways to think about sectors of things that we can address to try and reduce the state's emissions. All right. So that's the first thing. I mean, it's, as I say, that's all good. Embedded in a lot of the discussion in the roadmap is equity and environmental justice, right? And those are good things. One of the things they talk about is making this all affordable. And so, again, as a strategy that stretches out over 20 or 30 years, what they're some of the buzzwords they use is something called no regrets strategies for reducing carbon dioxide emissions. And what does that mean? Well, because you have a 30-year timeline, you can look out and say that over the course of the next 30 years, X number of homes are going to change their heating systems, right? And all of the cars that are running today on the road will probably be gone in 20 years, right? You have a whole new fleet of cars, right? So the idea is that every time a fossil fuel-consuming technology reaches the end of its life, you replace it with something that's compatible with the 2050 goal, right? And that's not really that big. You're not really changing that much because whoever owns that heater in the basement needs to get rid of it anyway. You're just requiring now that that be a climate compatible kind of technology. Right? So there's these, and that's the cheapest way to go forward. And I think we talked a couple of shows ago about how to retire coal plants, right? By envisioning when they were going to be reach their end of life, right? And then the economic cost of replacing those things is much less, right? You don't have to go in and rip out a brand new technology and put in a brand new, say, gas heater and put in a heat pump today, right? You can, in a sense, if you're planning it, you can allow that thing, the original equipment, to reach its end of life. So there you go.
Right, there's that French word laissez-faire, right? Doesn't that mean, I think it means leave to do is the translation. It seems like that's what's going on here. There's some part of it that's sort of like, all right, we're just going to leave those polluting entities to slowly die their death. And, you know, and we talked about that in the last show, but I do sometimes, you know, wonder if that's not aggressive enough. Right. For what we need. And I think I mentioned that in the last show, too. But this regarding this whole bill, the Commonwealth Magazine did a roadmap plan. The Commonwealth Magazine did an article about it. And it sort of talks about this interesting fight is not the right word, but
tension.
Tension. Yeah. Between two people, Kathleen or Katie Theoharides, I'm not sure if I'm saying her name correctly. I apologize, Katie, if you happen to be listening. And Elizabeth Turnbull Henry. Elizabeth is president of the Environmental League of Massachusetts, and Katie Theoharides is the Secretary of Energy and Environmental Affairs. And Kathleen is saying that there's some debate about whether we should be 40, 45, 50% emission reductions targets for 2030. And Katie said 45 is where we want to be because that keeps us on track for our goals, but it will not cost us. It keeps the costs in check. So it's the best balance between reaching our emissions goals and keeping the cost in check. And Elizabeth Turnbull Henry, from the ELM, president of the Environmental League of Massachusetts, said that that's not aggressive enough. We should be pushing for 50%. And you know, it's 5% difference. Both things are great. Let's go for one of them. But this idea of, you know, trying to balance costs, I know that it's important, but I also worry that we're doing this penny saved, pound foolish thing, where if you are trying to save the money now by letting this laissez-faire attitude, just let the coal plants burn out, you know, but then we have to deal with the aftermath of climate impact and all of the emergencies that are going to come from that. And those are expensive. And so in some ways, I think we should just invest the money now. We should shut down the coal plants. We should target 50%. We should target 60%. I mean, I know there's a reality check that has to come here too, but I really struggle sometimes with this idea of, you know, well, let's make sure it doesn't cost us too much now. Because I know that the costs are going to be great in 10 years.
Well, you have hit the nail on the head, right? I mean, I think you're quite right. I guess what I'm doing here is reporting what the governor's roadmap is laying out. Whether or not it's aggressive enough, I agree. Is it reasonable people can say that we should be doing more, right? We should be shutting everything down, you know, spend. And this is where I think the Biden $2 trillion plan comes in, and why I think, I'll quote Winston Churchill, right? He says, in the middle of World War II, planning for D-Day or something, that the plan itself means nothing, but planning in the active verb sense means everything. Right? So if we're figuring out what it is that we would do, right, we've got a plan to go ahead. When the conditions change and all of a sudden there's $2 trillion worth of money floating around ready to be spent, well, you've got the groundwork for reacting to that. And I think that the question of whether or not we should be including the, you know, this thing of, you know, keeping the economy afloat kind of thing as the counterbalance to the kind of urgent action we need, you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all, right? I mean, so this is the argument I think they're making in these roadmaps, and I'll switch briefly to the second roadmap that talks about 2030 goal. I think they said they're going to retrofit 1 million homes between now and 2030, right? That's the number they think they can get to with this, as you call it, laissez-faire thing, where, you know, you get to the end of life of the system, you replace it with something green, you're going to be busy getting to 1 million homes, right? And is that enough? Well, no. I mean, we should be, you know, I think we talked in the show about having one day a week without electricity if we need to, right? In order to reduce our carbon. So, yes, but the governor's plan, I mean, over the years, Mariah, I've said, you know, in having the endless arguments about whether or not climate change is real, you know, I would say things like, I just want to get to a place where we're arguing about the solution.
That's true.
Right? And not about the exist. So it's fantastic progress.
That we're here.
If you say, that's not fast enough, you say, yes, it is fast enough. That's a great debate to be had.
That's true.
That's a good place for us to be.
And just to go back to the 1 million of existing homes that they're planning for energy retrofits, I do want to point out that means new jobs too, right? That's a really great place for it doesn't take a lot of skill to figure out how to green your home to make it more energy efficient. So it's a great source of jobs.
Right. And that comes under the heading you may hear more of. It's called workforce training. Right. Because now you've got this framework in which you can give, you know, every kid in high school can have it instead of going to the McDonald's, right? No matter what school you go to, you can get a job learning how to retrofit homes, right? You've got a skill. And so those are good things to have. So let me come back. So we're going to come back to this famous 2050 roadmap. And again, for the technique that the people in the state of Massachusetts use, which is interesting, what they did was to say, to plot out plausible ways on the four pillars, right? Reducing, increasing the wind turbines, reducing the end use energy. With those four pillars, basically, they laid out 8 different pathways that they could get from where we are today to net zero by 2050. And what they did was to throw kind of challenges into the face of the, you know, basically the state of Massachusetts as it tries to get there. And so and it's just an interesting discussion. And I think it gives some credibility to the work that went into the roadmap, which again, I think, well, we may disagree in some details, is an interesting topic. The first pathway is, they say, everything works on average as we expect it. Okay. And if everything works on average as we expect it in terms of electric vehicles and wind turbines and blah, 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 basically we win, right? We get to 2050. Things are not really much more expensive than they are now. If anything, you know, is cheaper. Everything's good. Then they say, what happens if we cannot develop offshore wind? Right. So you want to do this, but you can't, you know, you can't build those wind turbines offshore. It turns out that they say, well, OK, we'll just build some new nuclear plants. OK, so my head's exploding. You can't see it, Mariah. My head's all in the ceiling right now. I say, oh, you know, we'll just skip the wind turbine. We'll have to build some new nuclear plants. But that's the kind of thing they thought about. They had another pathway that said, what if we got to get to 2050, but we can't get rid of those darn heck pipelines that bring natural gas in? Right? And they say, okay, if you're going to do that, then you're going to have lots more ways to basically sequester carbon and stuff. Right? So if they say, you know, so another pathway is to say, okay, we've got everything except that our programs for improving the efficiency of people's houses doesn't work out the way you want it to. It kind of fails. What happens? Well, is what it says is that the costs go up, right? Because that's a big waste of energy. But again, they've thought it through. They go and they say, what happens if the battery technology doesn't come through? In other words, to have a lot of electricity from wind turbines, you have to have good batteries between now and 2050. What happens then? Well, you get a lot more costs, right? Without the batteries, it's a bad thing. So, and again, this tells you that you really got to make the battery technology go. You really got to think about that because that's a risk factor. They question, okay, we want to get to this 2050 goal, but maybe we don't have good regional cooperation. Maybe we have a civil war between Massachusetts and New Hampshire and they don't send us any of that hydropower or something, right? And then they talk about what if we, in the positive sense, get to use the microgrid stuff so that every company that has solar panels on its roof, we get to take advantage and incorporate that. I mean, what that does is it allows you to start thinking about, yeah, okay, there's a bunch of things that might happen, right? We got to start planning to accommodate for them. We hope everything goes well, but we got to plan for the worst. I don't know. They're doing it.
I got to say, I think Winston Churchill would be very proud of that document. That's a lot of planning.
That's a lot of planning. There's a lot of jargon in it. We probably need to stop here. I mean, I recommend a couple things. One is that it is a good thing to try and read, but if you can't read it, at least know that there are hardworking people in the state of Massachusetts government thinking about how to get us to 2050. The document is reasonable, certainly could be challenged. Right, you could say, as Mariah, you did. You say that's not quite good enough.
I'm good at that.
We have a great basis for a discussion now, right? At least we got something to argue about. We talked last week about the climate bill that is on Governor Baker's desk, and so this is where a little disconnect comes in for me. Is like I don't know why he has not already signed that bill because it's consistent pretty much with his roadmap, right? My request, dear listener, is to please call the governor. You can call the governor. If you're listening to the show on Monday, January 11th, you can call the governor at 617-725-4005. I'll say that again. Get your pencil out. 617-725-4005. And urge the governor, at least tell the governor's voicemail, which is what you're going to get. Please tell the governor's voicemail that you want him to sign the climate bill. And because the climate bill is connected to this roadmap, it's a good thing. Right, Mariah?
Absolutely. I'm going to call him on Monday. I'm going to call him again on Monday.
As soon as you get, dear listener, as soon as you get done with this podcast, I'm sure you're still with us now, 25 minutes into this show. Once we're done, I want you to call the governor. Anyway, we got to stop there. I'll put up that information on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you want to know the governor's phone number, send me an email, podcast@massclimateaction.net, and you can make suggestions about what we should be talking about, et cetera, et cetera. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, all of the modern podcast distribution apps. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. It keeps us grounded and heading in the right direction. It's that plan that Winston Churchill spoke about. We will close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector. And let me just parenthetically say, and Massachusetts, but anyway, transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you for listening to me.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone else for being out there. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.